Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
Indeed it is. On Tuesday, October 14th, I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt, joined by my golden-haired friend to my left. Introduce yourself.
Kevin McCory here in for Cherry Gregg. So today on the show, Avi, we're talking about the state of the economy. We've got a lot of interesting things happening. Gold and silver prices going through the roof. That caught our attention. Stock market just trends up and up and up through all these questions and all this turmoil circling around. So what's going on with that? But of course, you look at American consumer confidence, that's down. What does it all mean? Is a recession around the corner? We heard that comment months ago. It didn't happen.
Didn't pan out.
Is something different now?
We're panning for gold, but that did not pan out.
We have two experts in today to break it down for us.
Of course, we want to hear from you. As always, folks, your contributions are essential. How are you feeling about your place in the economy? What questions do you have about the bigger picture of the American economy? 888-477-9499 is the number to call. Email us at studio2@whyy.org if you're on YouTube or Facebook. Hello. Drop your comment right there in the chat.
Before we get to all that, Avi, we have our trio of local news stories.
Yeah, starting with some breaking news this morning. The man who set fire to Pennsylvania's governor's mansion while Governor Shapiro and his family slept pleaded guilty this morning to attempted murder and other charges. He was sentenced to 25 to 50 years in prison. Cody Ballmer admitted to the attack, which took place in April during the Jewish holiday of Passover and caused major damage to the governor's mansion. Ballmer told authorities at the time that he carried out the attack because of Shapiro's support for Israel. Shapiro is, of course, Jewish. Ballmer's family has said they do not believe this attack was politically motivated and that Ballmer is suffering from severe mental illness. Ballmer also said at the time that he would have attacked Shapiro with a hammer if given the opportunity. He turned himself into police shortly after committing this crime.
And then Shapiro was just live from Harrisburg this morning. We were watching along on CNN. He acknowledged the difficulty that this entire ordeal has been on his family, what it's been like to be in the public eye as a public figure who, you know, there's so much political violence cycling around on both sides of the aisle. And one of the things he warned was, you know, don't become numb to it. Don't take this for granted. This is a really, you know, big deal, and we should be urging and cautioning against this and trying to tamp down the rhetoric as much as we can on both sides.
And the post-fire images of the mansion are still chilling. They're still affecting. I was looking at them just this morning as this news broke, and it is still shocking to see the governor's mansion, you know, and parts of it burnt to a crisp. And we're still in the long process of trying to repair that damage and restore to the governor's mansion to what it once was. Today is sort of a step in that restoration process, at least in metaphorical sense. And so, again, that news this morning, if you missed it, the man, Cody Ballmer, who set fire to the Pennsylvania governor's mansion in April, has pleaded guilty to attempted murder and has been sentenced to 25 to 50 years in prison. Story number two now, Kevin.
Yeah. A plan to convert the Pennhurst property into an AI data center is getting pushback from residents in Chester County.
Okay.
This is a good story out this morning by the Inquirer's Frank Coomer. So you probably know the site. Pennhurst was a state hospital for people with developmental issues for much of the 20th century. It became notorious for patient abuse. A series of investigations led to closure in 1987. You know, that kind of ended a wave, or was the end of a wave of these state hospitals really across the country, but there were a few notable examples in our area. The property sits vacant until it was purchased in 2008. It's turned into a Halloween attraction.
And
there
that
was actually a lot of controversy about that, back and forth about that. But this group, who's owned it since 2008, Pennhurst Holdings LLC, is now out with this sketch of a plan saying, let's turn this into a 125-acre data center, and it is on land zoned for industrial mixed-use development. So it doesn't seem like there's a real path for the townspeople to block it, except for the vocal opposition that they are now
make enough of a stink
doing, right? So residents and some local lawmakers voicing concerns. They say there's going to be water issues, energy issues, noise level issues, and of course just change the nature of this rural area. And if you're not familiar exactly, it's like northwest of Phoenixville in Chester County.
So an area where people move to get away from the noise.
Yes, yes.
And of course, we know these data centers are also a big energy suck as well. They require a lot of water. People have concerns about that. I mean, this is an interesting story on so many levels. You mentioned the history, the collision of the past with the future, because many local leaders, national leaders, they want to attract precisely this type of investment, building out these data centers, which are in such high demand. That's going to come into conflict over and over and over again with the preferences of the people who are going to live near these data centers. We're going to see this story, and this is no great prediction, not going out on a limb here. We're going to see this story over and over and over again, Kevin. And one of the big questions out there, not specific to this case, but future cases, will we see townships with sites that could be developed into data centers preempt them by changing zoning laws so that they do have a lever to pull potentially when someone wants to build a data center in that area? And this is the story of American development on so many levels. If you want to stop something from happening, you put it into zoning laws. I mean, that's really how it works, right? So I'm curious to see how other townships in our region and across the country will look at this case and say, how could we stop this from happening to us?
Right, right. And you noted, you know, political will on both sides of the aisle at the federal level, the state level, to say, you know, Pennsylvania, we want to be a part of the AI future.
Yep.
But what does that mean on a local level when you get down to it? And what's the community impact? And you have that push and pull. And like you said, we're going to see this story many times, we think, over the next few years, few decades.
Many, many times. And by the way, later in the show, we're going to be talking about the just billions, trillions of dollars pouring into AI investment. So these are deep-pocketed folks. And they want to get these data centers built and built fast. Story number three. Big shift in tone here, folks. Major mascot news. Former 76ers mascot Hip Hop.
Heard of him.
Will make his triumphant return to the court this season. For those that don't know, Hip Hop was a muscle-bound, sunglass-sporting, do-rag-rocking bunny rabbit who served as the team's mascot from 1998 to 2011. Hip Hop will appear alongside current mascot Franklin the Dog occasionally throughout the upcoming season as the franchise honors the 25th anniversary of the last Sixers team to make the finals back in 2000-2001. They're also going to, by the way, be wearing these classic throwback jerseys to honor that team. There's going to be celebrations to honor that team. But a lot of folks were wondering, would Hip Hop hop his way back into our hearts? And I've got good news if you were hoping for that. Hip Hop's back, folks.
Hip Hop's back.
And I know you're over the moon, Kevin. you're vibrating with excitement here.
Clearly the Sixers.
Uh-oh, here comes the wet blanket. Here comes the wet blanket, folks.
Futures have not looked good lately.
Sure.
So this is obviously a big marketing ploy to get some butts in seats, get some energy around the 25th anniversary, and, you know, have some good vibes, have some nostalgia. You're a fan, though, Avi? You like Hip Hop?
Oh, boy. I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. If you're happy about this, I'm happy for you. If I were bringing back a Sixers mascot, it would not be Hip Hop. It would be Hip Hop's predecessor. Do folks remember him? Big Shot.
I do not remember.
You don't remember? Oh. No. Big Shot is the best Sixers mascot that's ever existed. First of all, he was the mascot when they won the championship, didn't just make it to the finals, so he's got that going for him. He was this big, blue, goofy, fuzzy guy, sort of in the mold of the Fanatic and Gritty. I think it's nice that sort of is like the Philly mascot, right?
Okay.
Just sort of this,
I can
bumbling, jowly guy who we don't really know why he exists. He wore these cool, oversized sunglasses. I would love to bring back Big Shot. He would have been my number one, Hip Hop by default number two. Got no problem bringing back Hip Hop. I just feel bad that Big Shot continues to be overlooked.
I'm going to go out on a little bit of a different thing here for
sure,
you.
Sure,
if we were going to dump one mascot that exists currently, where are you going? Because I know where I'm going.
Swoop.
Okay, Swoop. I am going...
Swoop, the Eagles mascot. Doesn't do it for me. It's sort of a... It just, I feel, has no character at all. Most people are going to say Franklin the Dog, the Sixers, I think.
I am going Quaker, the Penn Quaker guy.
Oh, what?
The
really?
Giant-faced, always smiling...
No, that's classic.
...evil-eyed, weird giant head. I took the kids to the Palestra to see a game, and it came down the aisle, and we had to run. To
freaked
the other
you
side.
Out? I wasn't thinking about college mascots. I do find the St. Joe's Hawk a bit annoying. He's always flapping his wings. That's his thing. He never stops flapping his wings, and it's like, give it a rest, buddy. But the Quaker's all right. He's been around for a while. By the way, speaking of old mascots, the Phillies, before the Fanatic, had Phil and Phyllis, who were sort of colonial Quaker-looking couple. I'd bring them back, too. Mm. I'm really actually overall, now that I'm talking about this, Kevin, I'm really just pro bringing back old mascots in general. They're delightful. They're nostalgic. And we all just get tired of the current ones. In fact, I remember when they got rid of hip-hop, people were like throwing a parade. They hated hip-hop. But then, you know, go away for a while, they love them again. It's cyclical.
All right. Well, we're
transitioning
here. That's a
deep philosophical thought. Mascots are cyclical in nature.
We're
all right.
Talking about the state
so
of the economy.
So is the economy. So
on
is the economy,
show,
folks.
After a quick break.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here at WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
And I'm Kevin McCrory. Cherry Gregg is off today. Of course, Avi, we know nothing gold can stay, hat tip Robert Frost, but the price of gold, well, that has stayed high for a while. Gold futures opened at record pace this morning, part of an ascent that began in early 2024 and has not let up.
Now, all of this suggests investors are antsy, but how do we square that antsiness with a largely bullish stock market? And how do we square that bullish stock market with a seemingly softening labor market, or those falling interest rates, or the stubbornly high inflation rate? So basically, what I'm saying, big picture, is what the heck do we make of this confusing American economy?
So let's ask the experts, as we do each and every day on Studio 2. We have Edward Nelling joining us in studio. He's the department head and professor of finance in the LeBeau College of Business at Drexel. Thank you so much for being here, Edward.
Thank you for having me.
And also Maria Aspin, NPR financial correspondent, joining us via Zoom. Thank you so much for being here, Maria.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you. And for our listeners and viewers, we want to know, what questions do you have about this financial market? Does this feel like a strong economy to you or a faltering one? Would love to get your perspective. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. So we pegged this show, Maria, to gold prices. Everyone's talking about gold. And the first thing you hear is that people invest in gold when they're feeling a little uncertain. Explain that to me, first off. How does an investment in gold, you know, buffer you against an economic downturn? How would that even, you know, theoretically work, Maria?
Well, I mean, at its very base, gold is a precious metal. It is something physical that you can theoretically buy and hold on to and hoard. So it is not ephemeral. It's not a stock or a bond that is theoretical, but that you don't actually probably own. Of course, there are complications and problems if you do actually want to get into the hoarding gold business, but that's kind of at the base of why gold and other precious metals like silver are seen as a safe haven investment at a time when investors are feeling uncertain about what else might be going on in the world, in the economy, as well as in the wider world.
Can I ask you just a quick follow-up? And we might just tilt off into like the world of like, all the economy is fake and none of this makes any sense. So stop me if we're going there, Maria. But I guess I still don't get it. Like, okay, you bought some gold and this is supposed to be sort of an insurance policy against a bad economy. But if the bad scenario happens and the economy gets worse, what do you actually do with the gold? I mean, I can't take it to Giant and buy food. Like, I get theoretically why it feels safe, but I don't understand practically how it works. Or maybe it doesn't work, Maria. I don't know.
Well, I mean, right, in the theoretical worst case scenario where like the world turns into Mad Max, I guess we could, you know, take it and barter on the post-apocalyptic wasteland. But, you know, that again leads to like, okay, you're hearing the headlines about gold.
Yeah.
You're maybe curious, you maybe want to diversify. And I'm not a financial advisor, but the ones that I talk to say, sure, you can actually go to Costco and you can buy a little bit of gold. But if you buy it if you buy the physical product in any like to any extent, then you have to worry about storing it. And if you are storing gold bars or gold whatever, then you have to maybe worry about security. Like, do you really want to keep this in your basement? And you know, again, and unless you want to go down like super hoarder prepper territory. Now, the good news is if you're curious and you want to diversify, or you just, you know, you're hearing about gold and you and you're interested in maybe investing in it, again, I'd say talk to a professional financial advisor. But the ones that I talk to say you could, for instance, buy into a gold-backed fund. So right. You're not actually in the business of owning the stuff itself. The other caveat, though, is that assuming that's what you're interested in, just kind of broadening out your portfolio and diversifying a little bit, unlike other assets or investments, gold doesn't pay dividends. It doesn't right. pay interest. So, you know, you're buying it, you're holding it, but it isn't actually bringing you anything unless you're holding on to it until a point when the prices again go up so much further that you can sell it.
Edward Nelling, I'm curious, maybe is there a distinction to make here between consumers buying gold and kind of the big governments and Federal Reserves buying gold, and how much of the price going up is being driven by Joe Schmo from, you know, Phoenixville, or is it the Federal Reserves?
Well, as you can imagine, the typical individual investor is not a big driver of overall market returns, whether it's in gold, silver stocks, or other assets. So the central banks hold reserves. We all know once upon a time we were on the gold standard where we were required to hold that. Now, Central banks choose to do that, especially in some developing or emerging economies where traditionally maybe they held their wealth in dollars to preserve it, where their own currency was depreciating over time. If the dollar is seen to be weakening, then gold can be a good alternative for those banks as a protection or as a hedge against their own currencies depreciating across the world.
So the dollar was my safety net. This safety net's thinning a little bit. Maybe go to this other safety net, which is gold.
Perhaps, right. So there could be a perception the dollar, with the current volatility in the marketplace, in the economy, in the world, is maybe not the same dollar that it once was.
And what's interesting here seems to be, in other times in the past where we've seen this rush towards gold, it's come after some sort of calamity in the economy. But that's not what's happening now.
Right. So there is, we might say, general uncertainty, but things are basically okay. Not, some people are losing their jobs, and so it's not like everything is great 100% across the board. It never is. But overall, the economy is okay. There aren't great concerns about inflation. The Federal Reserve, and there's been a lot of discussion about the Fed, but the Federal Reserve is doing a good job of monitoring the economy. We don't have a pandemic. We're not facing anything. There are certain, perhaps, political events around the world that capture attention. But at the moment, there is no calamity.
So, yeah, then it's very confusing. Why has the price of gold been soaring now for a sustained period of time? So, again, going beyond that first step of maybe people are feeling antsy, it's why do they feel antsy when there aren't like these huge blinking red lights saying bad economy, bad economy, bad economy. Maria, how do you begin to unpack that for us?
What have I been spending my year doing? Confusing. I've just been using the word weird over and over again.
Use it again. It's weird. It's very weird.
It's very weird. And to be clear, we saw, you know, gold, as you mentioned, has been on a rally for a few years. But this year we saw it really running up or start a run back in the spring when President Trump first unveiled the massive tariffs around his so-called Liberation Day on pretty much everything that the U.S. imports. That's when we saw the stock market, you know, plunge, and there were a few days of really massive uncertainty and concern. Now, the market has largely recovered from that, and there have been some other factors playing into gold continuing its run. For instance, the Fed is lowering interest rates. That does lead to some questions about inflation, and gold is seen as a hedge against inflation. So, but again, we are in this weird period where there's a lot of uncertainty, to use another word of the year. The government data that we have. We don't have the most up-to-date government data because of the ongoing federal shutdown, but the government data does show a slight uptick in inflation. It does show that the hiring market is not as strong nearly as we thought it was, but unemployment is still pretty low.
Yeah.
So we're in this space where consumers don't feel great about the economy. There's a lot of worry about what the long-term impact, perhaps, of these tariffs might be eventually, but we haven't felt them, or consumers at least have not fully felt their impact. The stock market and big companies are generally feeling great. So we're, again, lots of mixed signals and lots of just what is the ultimate outcome going to be?
Edward, how do you untangle this, right? Because if we say when there's a rush towards gold, it's because of uncertainty and tentative feelings. But then typically when we see the stock chart going up and to the right, we think that that's signaling, you know, good times ahead. So how do you untangle those two things that we're seeing?
Well, first, one of the things that we should do is remind ourselves when we talk about the stock market, that is a collection of individual companies. Now, in recent years, there has been this concentration of these very big companies at the top. So if we talk about the S&P 500 as a stock market, it's 500 stocks, but three stocks, NVIDIA, Apple and Microsoft, they represent 20% of the market.
So if they're doing good, the S&P is basically doing good.
Correct. Yeah. And more broadly that you hear about the Magnificent Seven, there's a few other stocks in there, and they're the drivers because the bigger stocks have a bigger influence on the overall market. So could it be the stock market's doing well just because of NVIDIA and technology-related AI investment or something like that? We haven't seen that before. That's a new element that contributes to the overall picture.
Speaking of elements, back to gold for a second. But about the number again, 888-477-9499. We would love to hear your take on the economy because, as you can tell, we're all very confused by it. Studio2@whyy.org is the email. But just going back then to gold. So there's this alternate explanation for maybe why the stock market is doing better than expected, possibly. Okay. But it still seems to me, like going back to what Kevin said, that if investment in gold is a sign of people feeling antsy, but they are feeling antsy without any sort of major economic indicator telling them to feel antsy, that maybe we're just in a world of vibes now where like economic fundamentals aren't necessarily, we can't point to those and say, that's what's driving X, Y, and Z. What's driving X, Y, and Z is kind of how investors, people feel. I mean, is that one possible explanation here?
It absolutely is. So ultimately, whether it's gold or any asset, the price in the market is set by supply and demand.
Yeah.
We can distinguish between the current market price and what we might call the underlying fundamental or intrinsic value, right? Gold is used not a lot. There are some industrial applications, jewelry, and so you would ask, is industrial production of gold or use demand for gold and jewelry going up? No, it's not that.
I think there's a gold flake cheesesteak you can get now at the Bellevue.
That might be, that's big in Philadelphia, I understand. So the
That's not the explanation. It's not industrial demand for gold.
Yeah. Right. And so then that leads to some type of demand on the investment side. One could be, as Maria noted, an interest in hedging against other risk where investors are saying, I need to direct some of my money to this other asset class. Another type of demand could be speculative, as we see sometimes we've seen cases of meme stocks in recent years, and many investors pile in to a particular asset, perhaps not because of good underlying fundamentals.
I was literally going to ask, is gold a meme stock now? Like, I mean, you're raising that possibility.
Right. And so the question is, how much of the underlying demand is there to stay? Let's say if investors are antsy, let's say they calm down for whatever reason or set of reasons. Well, could that lead to a reduction in the demand for gold and then a decrease in the price?
Yeah, if you were offering financial advice, I don't know if you're in the market too, but you know, there's probably people out there who think, okay, let me put some money in gold and see if the elevator goes up and then I'll cash out in a year or two. What do you think about that?
So first, I'm not a certified financial advisor, so I will give my general recommendations there. And it's always good for investors to talk with a professional, especially in times of uncertainty. So first, how they hold it, again, from Maria's comments earlier, you don't necessarily want to go out and buy gold coins. I bought a small gold coin in 1980. I don't have no idea where it is right now,
no,
right?
No.
So that's not the thing to do. But there are funds, exchange-traded funds. You can hold them in a brokerage account. So one of the questions that you ask is excellent. That is, should investors hold gold? Or should they hold silver or other alternative assets, perhaps? The answer is probably yes in some proportion. Then, okay, if they should hold it, how much? What they shouldn't do, what has never really worked, is to chase returns. So don't dive into the pool because everybody else is already in the pool. That generally does not work. Gold and their forecast from Goldman Sachs and other financial services firms, there's some forecasts that it will rise. Could it rise next year? Sure. But again, there are no underlying fundamentals, earnings, dividends, cash flows driving gold like there are companies in the stock market.
Yeah, so don't go Scrooge McDuck style diving into the big pile
that's
of gold
right.
coins. That's not advisable.
Sounds painful, too.
You'd hurt yourself as well. I want to read this comment from Nunya Business on YouTube, who says, the stock market does not accurately depict how the average person is doing. Prices are high and only going to get higher with tariffs. Tariffs, Maria. I wanted to ask about that. Yet again, we are in a news cycle where the Trump administration and China are barking at each other. Who knows where that will end? When all of this started, early part of Trump's second term, we did see real market reaction to major tariff announcements. There's still reaction now, but my sense of it is that it's kind of muted, or like investors have now kind of just, I don't know, forgotten about it. They're willing to look past some of this tariff stuff. How do we square what's going on with tariffs with sort of like investor behavior at this point, at this stage, Maria?
I would say that's exactly what I'm hearing from investors. Not that they've forgotten about it necessarily, but that they feel like they've gotten their hands around or their arms around what the impact of tariffs are going to be. I was talking with an investor at a large bank last week before the most recent round of the trade war jabs between President Trump and China. And he said, yeah, I mean, we pretty much know what the shape of tariffs are going to be. Now, there are a couple of caveats. As we saw over the weekend, President Trump can upset that delicate balance, or can sort of continue to shake up what investors think the equilibrium is. On Friday, President Trump said, you know, postured against China, China retaliated. Then President Trump said, you know, actually, no, things are going to be fine. And then this morning we saw Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent saying some more things about China, and the market initially like panicked again before getting back, before basically calming down a little bit this morning. So tariffs still do have the ability to, again, to use a technical term, freak out investors. But I think there's also a little bit of crying wolf in that investors are now used to a lot of different, sometimes erratic pronouncements coming out of the White House. And there's an expectation that whatever the first offer is, President Trump, you know, is known to like negotiating and making a deal, and that eventually
it is Taco Tuesday,
down.
Maria. Just putting that out.
So I guess, you know, considering all the conversation that was had about potential recession around the corner after those April announcements from the president, and that didn't materialize. If when you're at the party or the bar, Maria, and somebody says, "Why didn't that happen?" Is it the answer you gave, or I guess is there some to some degree this AI bubble thing happening too, where that's just sheltering the overall stock market because of this, you know, big booming time for AI and tech?
So I think two answers. One, we don't yet fully know what the impact of tariffs will be, in part because these were fairly well telegraphed. So a lot of companies did stockpile goods and imports before they went into effect. And have said that they're not fully passing on the cost to consumers yet. So that may be the case, say, through the holiday season, through the end of the year. We don't necessarily know yet what the actual impact on prices is going to be, say, 6 months from now. The other thing going on, or the other answer to your question, is yes, the AI bubble is really buoying a lot of the stock market for the reasons that I'd mentioned. I mean, the Magnificent Seven, the big tech companies that are just throwing gobs and gobs of money at AI, investors seem very, very happy with that so far, although we have definitely seen a lot of people warning, a lot of top executives at some big companies warning that we probably are in a bubble and that at a certain point it may burst.
Yeah. And I guess the open question is, if indeed that AI bubble bursts, whatever bursting really looks like, how big an impact does that have on the overall economy at this point? Not just the market, right? Right, Ed? But the overall economy. Let's just imagine, let's forecast that this AI sort of rocket ship can't go like up forever. At some point, it at least evens out. And then what happens to the economy in the aftermath of that? Do you think we have a hold on that yet? Or is this all just happening so fast, such an unprecedented rate? It's like, who the heck knows?
It's probably more of the latter.
Yeah.
Because all of this is so new. A couple of years ago, when the AI wave started to form, there was a lot of fear. There's promise, there's hope, there's fear. We still don't know how it's going to play out, right? It's like the technology of web searches and everything else that we had emerged 20 to 25 years ago, right? No one would have forecast then what things look like now. So where AI will go, it's not going to go away, that's for sure, right? The question is, what's going to be that equilibrium? And I don't think anybody knows that.
Yeah. I want to bring this comment from Domi R on YouTube. It says, people are working low-paying jobs, some more than one. The quote-unquote low unemployment numbers hide the reality that those jobs just keep their heads above water. The market needs new numbers. Mr. Harold Williams Jr. on YouTube is not trusting those labor statistics, by the way, as throwing some shade at the Trump administration. But there is, I think, there's a lot of ways to interpret the low unemployment rate. And I'll also note that the Washington Post had a statistic that there's people are changing jobs at far lower rates now than they have at any point really since the early pandemic. People are really holding on to their jobs. What's your synopsis, your summary of the labor market, Maria?
I was just reading something this morning. The new term is apparently job hugging, where we had the
like
great
that.
Resignation
job
a couple
clinging,
of years ago.
Maybe, yeah.
Job clinging, yeah. Yes. We are in this situation where hiring is not really happening. It's not robust. And even during the government shutdown, some of the private numbers that we've gotten from various private companies, they don't necessarily have the full spectrum that government data does, but they provide windows into what's going on, and the data there has not been reassuring. We're also seeing some of President Trump's migration policies are cutting down on immigration, which is also affecting the job market and maybe hiding the true extent of how much job creation there is or isn't being right now. I'm sorry, I keep on feeling like I'm saying we're in a wait-and-see environment. But
if that's what's honestly happening, I think we can repeat that ad nauseum. It really feels like it permeates everything, Kevin. Yeah,
and we're seeing pain from American consumers, right? The most recent survey from the University of Michigan had confidence at the lowest in a decade. We saw an interview with the CEO of GoFundMe, who's saying he's seeing a dramatic rise in people posting, crowdsource my grocery bill. So if you look at it from the point of view of average American, do you see signs that there's positive things on the horizon despite all this uncertainty? I guess the Trump administration's bet is what we're doing on tariffs will ultimately do something positive for the American economy, despite the turmoil in the middle. Do you see it that way? Do you see hope or no?
Well, so tariffs can play a positive role if, let's say, another country was dumping products in the U.S. at a low price to shut down American industry, and then they're going to raise prices later. That's a temporary thing. If the tariffs are set to protect industries, ultimately competition will prevail across the world, right? So if you protect a domestic industry, should we still have a large textile manufacturing industry in the U.S.? Probably not. Not that there were tariffs back then, but the global economy will evolve, and you can't stop that. There are small, short-lived checks and balances, and that's generally the role that tariffs play, which can be a positive role, but I think that there is still uncertainty out there. A lot of students graduating from college are searching and searching for jobs. A lot of the low paid necessarily, but entry level jobs in technology, they seem to be disappearing. Mm. Now, part of that could be AI stepping in. Part of it could be the tech companies overhired during and right after COVID. They really ramped up their hiring, and so now they're tapping the brakes on that.
So it doesn't sound like you're hopeful for the future if, you know, Trump basically continues his march towards more tariffs and more tariffs and a tariff war.
I would say even if there's more tariffs, in the long run, there will be bipartisan recognition of what we need to do to move the economy forward. And that's what's helped propel the country for 250 years. And so it will prevail. Could we have a tough year or two? Always. But in the long run, I think calm, cool heads and strong economics and American innovation and work ethic will prevail.
Hmm. Interesting comment from Deborah. Deborah says, I kind of had a freak out when the government shook down Intel because it seemed antithetical to a capitalist free market system. And Deborah wants to know how moves like this could impact the market going forward. Of course, Intel's just one company. And what it made me think of Maria when Deborah wrote this is kind of like the conversation around tariffs. Big, bold, idiosyncratic, unorthodox moves by the federal government haven't seemed to trigger any lasting panic in the market yet, whether it's the Intel thing, the tariff thing, and anything else. And I guess the question is whether there's some breaking point in the future where the markets go, whoa, this is all very unusual, and we are concerned. Help me unravel that, Maria.
Yeah, it's such a great point to bring up, Deborah. This is something that I've spent a lot of time reporting on because sort of separate from the tariffs and how the markets are reacting to them, connected but separate, is this question of President Trump is exerting what many in the business community say is an extraordinary and unprecedented degree of influence over U.S. companies. There have been comparisons made, again, by people and experts who would traditionally identify as libertarian or Republican, free markets, who say that President Trump is driving the U.S. economy and U.S. free market capitalism more towards a model of China style state capitalism, and we're seeing this not only in his comments and eventual decision, his comments about the Intel CEO and then the government's eventual decision to take a 10% stake in Intel. Also, what we've seen the U.S. government agree to or gain from, say, NVIDIA to sell a particular type of chip in China. We're also seeing this in the media sphere with what the FCC has, with how the FCC is relating to a lot of media companies, Disney and Jimmy Kimmel being perhaps the most recent example. I don't think there's any debate that President Trump is really creating. I mean, he's just interacting with private U.S. businesses to an extent that is unusual, at the very least, for the White House and the government. And there are lots of questions in the business community about what this means long term. It's just not, it's not really coming out in the markets.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing any kind of coordinated response from the business community at this time, in part because I think a lot of, we have seen again President Trump going after CEOs by name, sometimes going after executives who are not even at the CEO level by name or by title. And nobody wants to be a scapegoat. Nobody wants to be a target. Nobody wants to attract that attention or that interest. And so this is an ongoing conversation in the business community.
Maria, I'm curious, when you talk to your sources, what are the things that they say, here are the real red flags that I'm looking for as we forecast out 6 months to a year through Trump's term? Like, what are they looking for in terms of, you know what, maybe this is somehow going to work, or no, there's real danger in the economy coming?
I mean, a couple of things. One, to go back to something Ed was saying about the long-term impact of tariffs, some of the tariffs may be successful in, say, bringing more manufacturing or creating more manufacturing and industry in the United States that is currently outsourced. But there are some things, like agriculture, for example, where there's just really no ability for the U.S. to domestically replace what we currently import. I did a story on European olive oil a few weeks ago, which 95% is currently imported. California grows a lot of olives and makes olive oil, but California alone cannot replicate the amount of olive oil that we currently consume from abroad. Longer term, I also think the concern is just the U.S. economy is a powerhouse, right? It is part of America's current superpower. And there is some concern about what the changes that President Trump is making to how the U.S. economy works, whether it's tariffs, whether it's how the government interacts with private companies. Maybe that will make us stronger. Mm. Maybe that will make the economy, you know, shore up the economy and make it stronger long term. But there is a lot of concern that it will have the opposite effect.
Yeah, I think there's concern, and this is from a listener who's worried about how all this could impact the attractiveness of American debt and the value of the dollar. A listener brought both of those things up because those are, you know, the sort of the power of the dollar is a big part of our economic and in some ways a cultural supremacy around the world. I mean, Ed, how concerned should we be about the strength of the dollar with all of this, again, we'll use that word, uncertainty?
Well, let's remind ourselves there is at least one advantage of a declining dollar, and that means that U.S. goods are cheaper in the international marketplace. So for American manufacturing companies, a decreasing dollar relative to other currencies in the world means it's cheaper to buy that asset or item made, or appliance made in the U.S., all else equal.
Yeah,
so there can be an advantage.
If I'm exporting things, I'm happy about this.
Right, yeah. Right, yes.
But what's the downside risk, I guess, of a weakening dollar, just in terms of America's position in the global economy?
Well, so if the dollar's going to weaken, then there could be decreased demand for U.S. Treasury securities. That makes it harder for the U.S. government to borrow. Mm. We're a heavily debt-financed economy, right? So if there is a lower interest in that, and if investors or around the world, let's say, instead of holding U.S. Treasury debt, want to hold debt issued by other countries in Europe or the U.K., then that can cause interest rates to rise. It's more expensive for our government and also then more expensive for companies in this country to borrow, increases their cost of financing. Nobody likes to pay more when you borrow, right?
Mm. Yeah, I guess the same question I asked Maria to you, Ed, like what red flags are you really looking for in the next 6 months? What are you seeing as the real indicators that we're heading somewhere good or bad?
I would say it's to some extent corporate earnings, because that's a sign of how well companies are doing. And if the overall market is the stock market is overvalued, then when we start to see earnings reports by a lot of companies, especially the bigger companies, that will those will be the tea leaves that many will read.
Understood.
Well, thank you so much. That's Ed Nelling, department head and professor of finance in the LeBeau College of Business at Drexel University. Thank you so much for your time today. Great insights.
Thanks for having me.
And I have to thank Maria Aspen, who I'm told is a Philly area native. Thank you. Maria's NPR's financial correspondent. Maria, thank you for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. And I got to stand up for the SJU Hawk. I
grew up going to Hawks the Hawk
games.
Will never
My
die.
Dad's on faculty at St. Joe's, so got to stand up for the Hawk.
I'm not. I'm persona non grata on Hawk Hill today, but I'll get back.
You're probably pro-dragon, I imagine.
All the way.
All the way. By the way, Buggy on YouTube reminds us of the sage words of Kai Rizdahl, who says often, the stock market is not the economy.
Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Adam Staniszewski and Tina Kalake engineered today's show. I'm the executive producer of the show, and I'm here along with Avi Wolfman-Arendt from Philadelphia at WHYY.
He's Kevin McCrory. I'm Avi. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here on Studio 2.